Hi, I'm Siskoid.
And I'm Dr. G.
And welcome to the third episode of Kung Fu Friday, a show that explores the best of Asian action cinema and hopes to inspire you to discover some awesome flicks from the other side of the world. KFF is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network and a cousin to Pulp to Pixels podcasts. How you doing, Dr. G?
Pretty good. A little under the weather, but we'll soldier on. If the star of our today's episode can make movies beat up and injured, I can do a podcast with a little bit of a sniffle.
That's right, because each episode explores a basic theme, usually an actor, but it can be an era, a director, a country, you know, a style. We pick two films to showcase that theme or that star, and our double feature this week stars the one and only Jackie Chan. And he's a guy that takes a licking and keeps on ticking and really bleeds for his art. Let me just give a few notes about Jackie Chan in case you're not very familiar with his career. He was a member of the Little Fortunes, a Chinese opera group that also included among its members Sammo Hung and Yun Biao. Jackie Chan started his film career as a stuntman and a double in such films as A Touch of Zen and Bruce Lee's Fist of Fury and Enter the Dragon. Though he stars in a few films in the 70s, his big break was Snake in Eagle's Shadow in 1978 under director Yuen Wu-Ping, who gave him full control over his stunt work. And his next film, Drunken Master, was an unqualified hit. So in those two films are the keys to his lifelong success, amazing stunts, and kung fu comedy, which soon became the trend in Hong Kong cinema. There was then an attempt at an American career. He appeared in Cannonball Run, for example, but the failure of The Protector in 1985 sends him back to Hong Kong, well, permanently, more or less. Not that he hadn't been making films there as well through the early 80s. Now, enough of a star by then that whatever he tried to do was imitated, he started to put out films with very generic titles, including the first police story film out in 85 and Best Film at the 1986 Hong Kong Awards, a film that would spawn many direct and spiritual sequels. It's in 1994 that Jackie becomes a household name in the West, I think, with the surprise success of Rumble in the Bronx, which has distributors release the earlier Super Cop in North American theaters in the next year. In 1998, the first of the Rush Hour films comes out. Jackie more or less has a parallel American and Chinese careers through the early 2000s, which on this side of the Pacific includes the Jackie Chan Adventures animated series. Remember that?
That is like one of my favorites. My sister and I love that series.
See, and may come to a Saturday Morning Fever episode sometime next year, I will say that, with one of my Lonely Hearts cohorts. But Jackie's lack of control in Hollywood blockbusters frustrated him, and with the withdrawal of Golden Harvest from the film industry, he founds his own film company, JCE Movies Limited, under which he starts making his own films. With full control, he allows himself different roles, including dramatic and even non-action ones. And on the American side, he voices a character in the Kung Fu Panda franchise and plays opposite Jaden Smith in the Karate Kid reboot. And he's still making films, though he slowed down on the fighting and stunts, given how many bones he's broken over his career. I think he's entitled. I didn't mention his music career, but he's got that too. 20 albums to his name. He's also a university professor, a philanthropist, and let's say it, a film icon.
Oh, that is for sure true.
Yeah, Dr. G, how did you discover Jackie?
Yeah, well, I remember seeing him in Cannonball Run, but I didn't know who he was at the time. But I think, like most Western audiences, it was Rumble in the Bronx for sure. And I think also he got a real boost because Tarantino really sung his praises early in his career as well. When Tarantino was first hitting the scene with things like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. And he talked a lot about how awesome Jackie Chan was as well. So I think those are the things that for me, but Rumble in the Bronx for sure. I've mentioned a couple of times on previous episodes that there was a TV documentary series called Incredibly Strange Picture Show that I watched at a much younger age when I was sort of getting into foreign films, and they had a whole thing about Asian cinema, and Jackie Chan got featured very heavily in that. And I think that's what sort of, before I saw Rumble in the Bronx, really got me to love Jackie Chan. But it's for sure Rumble in the Bronx. And I think after I saw that movie, I started to like just devour Jackie Chan movies from there forward.
Obviously I'd seen Cannonball Run, but I don't even remember anything from it really. You know, it's all Dom DeLuise or whatever, but yeah, I wouldn't have known. Here's my strange origin with him, because I was in an improv workshop, and one of my students jumped into somebody's arms and did like a flying kick kind of thing. You know, it's someone else playing the wires, let's say, so he could float in air. And he said he was doing like a Jackie Chan moment, or he was playing at being Jackie Chan. And I made like I understood what he meant, but I sort of like mistook Jackie Chan for Charlie Chan. And I wasn't too sure the Charlie Chan, you know, detective stories had Kung Fu in it or in them or not. It was just like a name recognition, but I was recognizing the wrong name. Stupid.
Ooh.
But that was like the same year that Rumble in the Bronx came to theaters. It was like before. So when Rumble did come, that same improv gang said, hey, you know, we were making these Jackie Chan jokes. You want to go see that Jackie Chan picture that's actually in theaters? So, of course, I did, and I went. And so that was my first real taste of it. For most American audiences, or North American audiences, I think that's possibly true, unless they were really into the Kung Fu genre and might have seen Legend of the Drunken Master or whatever beforehand. But my first Jackie was that. And then when Super Cop came out the next year, I went to see that as well and loved it. And then I started seeing, you know, Jackie Chan pictures. I don't have much interest in the American pictures he's done, whether those are, you know, the Rush Hours or the Shanghai Noons. That's not my bag. Or it's
that's this is my shocked hurt. I love the Rush Hour movies.
Well, that's still in my to watch list, let's say. I've delved more deeply into his Hong Kong stuff from the beginning to even stuff that's today. Now, I watched a something that he made in the mid-2010s only recently. You know, so I'm more into his Chinese stuff, but I'm not against watching the American stuff. It just hasn't happened for me yet. So a lot of people like the Rush Hour film, so I, you know, eventually I will get to it. Let's talk about what movies we chose for today, because it's a double feature. And what film have you decided to spotlight?
Well, I picked his sort of Western audience coming out party of Rumble in the Bronx.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And I've gone as well as to something that's pretty iconic to his career, and that's the original, the first Police Story from 10 years before or so. Police Story is my choice, and well, we'll get to it, but I don't think I was as hot on it this time as I was the first time I saw it. But let's just tease people with that basic opinion. But it is, you know, a seminal film because it was the first time really that Hong Kong had put Kung Fu and cop drama together. It changed the landscape of Hong Kong cinema at the time and spawned many, many films that have the Police Story label on them, even though they might not be, you know, about the same character exactly.
To millions of fans around the world, he's a living legend. If you've never seen him before,
it's him! Give me that gun!
You've never seen action.
We got hostages! They're in a hovercraft! Call out the Coast Guard!
New Line Cinema presents the action hero who does all his own stunts. Jackie Chan.
So Rumble in the Bronx, take us through it, Dr. G.
All right. Just to get us started, we have, it's directed by Stanley Tong, and of course, stars Jackie Chan, Anita Mui, first of all, yep, Canadian actress. Originally, it was going to be titled Red Bronx. They eventually went with Rumble with the Bronx, and I'd have to say very, very obviously, not New York, but we'll get into that a little later. This is a movie that had like a, it had an original Asian film production, but then New Line Cinema got it and then did a huge redub with Jackie Chan involved in that. And that's when it got repackaged and resent. And once again, like as we said, this is his big debut. To give a quick sort of rundown, this is a, Jackie Chan plays Chinese national Kyung, who is coming to visit his uncle, who lives in New York, before his uncle's wedding. His uncle is a shop owner in the Bronx, which is portrayed as a very seedy and sort of rough and tumble part of New York City. And he quickly, as he sort of kind of settles in, and his uncle, who's selling his store, so this is the introduction of Elaine, played by Anita Moy, he then finds himself quickly running afoul of one of the local street gangs, who has prominently in it a number of members, including Angela, who we'll come back to, but also Nancy, played by Francoise Yip. He also, at this time, when introduced into this, befriends a young paraplegic boy, Danny, during a number of altercations with the gang, including an attempted sort of shoplifting event that ends in a classic Jackie Chan beatdown, a motorcycle race, as it were, that he disrupts, and pretty graphic, I'd say, trap sequence, which the gang lays for him later. The plot eventually, though, kicks off with a group of criminals, actually more professional criminals than this rough street gang of diamond thieves, who get into a shootout, as it were, in the middle of the street, which is witnessed by members of the street gang, including specifically Angelo and Jackie Chan and Danny. Through a series of misadventures during this, the diamonds that are become one of the sort of the MacGuffin focus of the rest of the film are stashed in Danny's wheelchair and become the focus of both the professional gang led by the mysterious White Tiger and Angelo in an attempt to recover them. Eventually, the stakes rise pretty high as members of the street gang are murdered by the professional mob, as it were, even to the point that Nancy and the head of the gang, who eventually sort of becomes begrudgingly friends with Jackie Chan, are held hostage. And Jackie has to stage a elaborate rescue with the police, including a fairly amazing hovercraft chase through New York that culminates in a successful end to the movie, with everybody saved, the diamonds recovered, and the bad guy getting a much-deserved comeuppance. And that's the pretty much... We'll get into the specifics of the plot. There's a lot of bits and pieces going on in here. It's a pretty straightforward plot, but there's a lot of sequences in it to lay out. But that's the basic strokes of it.
You can see why it became a sort of cult hit because, well, I mean, it is a comedy, but it's also a little bit unintentionally hilarious.
Yeah.
The focus is on amazing stunts and action, and you've got, you know, Chinese nationals basically making a film in Vancouver with a partly Canadian crew and some Canadian actors. And sometimes a Chinese director might be a bit tone deaf, you know, deaf to how certain characters are speaking. So then you'd have Danny, for example, the kid. He's such a bad actor in this.
Oh, my God.
But a funny one. I mean, it's so bad, it's endearing. You don't always expect much from child actors, and certainly not in this kind of genre where it's not about the acting. So Danny is unintentionally funny. And you also have a lot of don't sweat the details kind of stuff. So and on Jackie's order, really, because it was Jackie who said, you know, we're faking New York, but it's more important to get the action right and shoot it right than any kind of geographical anachronisms. It's not whatever the word would be, but the fact that the Rockies are in the background at some point.
Oh, yeah, you can clearly, there's parts where I'm like, yeah, having visited Vancouver myself, I was like, I remember that. I was like, I think I ate at that restaurant. So
yeah, it looks like Vancouver in places. And I mean, what is this golf course that is right within spitting distance of the Bronx? What is that kind of thing? Or even, you know, just little continuity or production snafus, like there's a fight in the grocery store and there's a whole display of empty Pepsi cans. In a grocery store, why would you have empties that are easy to knock down, but it's just part of the fight, right? Or, you know, on Facebook, you mentioned that you were watching this for research. And there was someone responded, you know, a funny bit that he liked where the kid plays on a Game Boy or whatever it is.
Sega.
It doesn't have a cartridge in it ever. So he's playing nothing. It's full of little bits like that. Never mind the whole, you know, street gang situation where, you know, that's a very 80s, even though it's 1994, it's 80s, 90s street gang of all ethnicities, and I don't know, it's like a neon glow kind of...
They looked like the street gang from the Schumacher Batman movies.
Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking of. You know, the one where Batman drives up a building, that one?
Yeah, that one. You know, this was a street gang that had like a lair and clearly had been ripping off like a bunch of stuff, but was kind of just like, and we just throw parties and stuff like that. They were half this sort of like teenage street gang full of 30-year-olds. And clearly 30-year-olds, it looked like, in a number of cases. But also rowdy, misguided kids all at once. It was like, yeah, there's a couple tones. But I think it was Siskel and Ebert, one of them, who had, in mentioning, they're just like, you don't watch the movie for that. You don't watch it for its plot. You basically watch it for Jackie Chan. I mean, he owns this movie with its physicality, his comedy, his character. I mean... One of the things I've always very much loved about Jackie Chan as the characters he plays often is that he plays these sort of like unabashedly good characters. And in this one, I feel is that case. He's this sort of like very upstanding sort of guy. Something I don't feel when we discuss Police Story is a bit of a contrast, to his character in Police Story. But in this one, he's clearly like the white hat. In it, you know, I like that in that role of he plays, and you just watch it. It's like, it's almost like going to see like the ballet. You don't know necessarily what is being said or opera, but you go for the performance itself.
Certainly more important and more engaging than, you know, wondering where the so-called bad guys are getting their light-up dune buggies and green motocross bikes. And they're not particularly evil villains, those ones, the street gang. Because they get turned. We've got to understand why Nancy, who is a good character and who makes the turn first and is Danny's sister and is, you know, taking care of a disabled little brother. We have to care for Nancy and think, no, Nancy's a good match for Kyung, and Nancy is a good person even though she's in this gang. She's in it for riding bikes on top of cars, you know, that's, you know, the thrills maybe, but she's not a bad person. So you've got to understand that they're not necessarily bad, they're just, it's just like a frat or whatever. They're just,
yeah, basically, yeah.
They're just crazy and out of control. And then you've got the real bad guys who are that crime gang. With the diamonds and probably the bad guys in limos, you know?
Yeah, with the suits. Yeah, the suit guys. Yeah.
And those guys are bad, where they will shake down a disabled kid and borderline torture. I mean, the worst that the street gang does is that so-called graphic moment that you mentioned, which is they sort of snare Jackie into a trap by staging a rape. So it's a fake rape, but it draws Kyung in, and then they use that moment to throw bottles at him and injure him. So that's at their worst.
Well, and, you know, at the very least, Angelo was, like, fully ready to murder Jackie in that sequence. So they're also gun-toters, too. So it was, yeah, it's a weird, it's once again, it's one of those things you just don't look at too closely, because every time I look very closely at the street gangs and this biker gang sort of, like, sort of moral compass. There's almost like a karmic imbalance in it. It was like, I don't think we should be calling those good people by the end of the movie. But you don't really care because you really just came to see Jackie Chan jump off stuff and hope, see if he doesn't die from his, I wouldn't say reckless, but definitely like danger-laden filming techniques.
Well, let's talk about those set pieces. Some are fights, some are stunts. Many times they merge because I think, you know, something about Jackie and his athleticism and the way he, you know, engineers set pieces is that, yeah, he may throw punches and kicks, but a lot of it is about avoiding getting hit. So in the avoiding, there are stunts. For example, you know, when he throws himself headfirst into the sunroof of a car to avoid a bike that almost runs him down, you know, the bike goes between his legs. That's really the type of action that we can expect from Jackie Chan, especially in those 10 to 15 years through the 80s and 90s, where he's avoiding hits in an entertaining way. So he's always the victim in these things. You know, you always feel for him. You always have sympathy for him because he's not an attacker. He's just, you know, trying to protect himself and protect others. And that's why he sort of focuses on more on stunts than on fighting. You know, he's not a killing machine like Bruce Lee is. His persona is softer and more lighthearted. There's an element of slapstick to it.
Yeah, and I think you, by mentioning Bruce Lee, you get a very good idea of it. I think the best example would be, you know, in our last episode, we discussed Enter the Dragon, and, you know, one of the sort of like signature pieces of that movie is that one sequence where he's basically stands in one place and fights, what was it, like 50 men coming at him endlessly. The camera is static and just watches him as he holds his ground and fights. But, you know, with Jackie Chan, he's like, he never stops. He's never not in motion. And the entire environment that he's in is his weapon, which is one of the things is so like imaginative and amazing about his work in all of his movies. You know, when later we were talking about like favorite moves, I was like, can I say the whole movie? It's because they're like so fluid in how they go from like one move to the next that it's hard to even pick apart what's the best part of that move, you know? So, yeah, no, it's just amazing how he uses it. And you can tell, you know, it's like you said, since his work with Yuen Woo-ping, you know, he's the stunt director as well in these movies. So, you know, he has a very strong control in those situations.
You're right about how he uses his environment entirely. So when he designs a sequence like this, or any of these sequences, it's about how, you know, looking at the environment, adding things to the environment, and then using, and then running through that environment and using each little piece. Like that fight in the clubhouse. The clubhouse is full of stolen goods. So your refrigerators and shopping carts and TVs and, you know, freezers and all sorts of stuff. And so he must move through that space, which is an absurd space, this weird clubhouse, and then using each of those items in a furious, fast-moving fight where he throws someone in the fridge, and then when the person comes out of the, and then he hits someone while they're in there, and when they come out of the fridge, and then you bang him with the other door, and everything is, you know, very intricate in a sense. And it's the same thing when he's fighting around a car. The whole car becomes something to go in and out of as you fight and avoid. And
the things he can do with a shopping cart.
Incredible. Those are sorts of moments that you remember because they are so striking. How does a person do that? So he's very, very acrobatic. But there's also, you know, more traditional stunts. And famously, when he jumps on the hovercraft in the climax, he broke his foot and so had to wear... I wasn't watching for it, but there are parts of the film where he has a sock...
Yeah.
That looks like a shoe over his cast. And he's actually doing the scenes with a broken foot.
Yeah. So the jump where he does from the bridge to the hovercraft, and when he lands, you can see his leg roll. You see his you see his ankle roll. And I'm just like, oh, I throw up a little in my mouth every time I see that.
One of the things you see in this film and the next film we're going to discuss, you see those injuries. They're on film.
Yeah.
It cuts to the next moment where you don't know the stuntman or the actor hurt themselves. Even Françoise Yip in this, during the motorcycle stuff, hurt herself.
Yeah, so did the other lady too. She went over the bike.
Yeah.
She like on the last one when the bike goes over her and she goes over the handlebars, and the next scene is her being taken away in an ambulance. So,
well, the next scene, you mean in the bloopers? Yeah, that's one of the things we should mention about the Jackie Chan signature, is that every film during the credits, you see bloopers, if you will, or outtakes, because they're not necessarily funny bloopers should be. But you do see, and I think the point of that is showing that the actual actors are actually doing the stunts, Jackie in particular, and that people really did get hurt, and you see a lot of ambulances in those blooper reels. People are actually did get hurt, so you can actually match that moment that you saw that looked real, as stunts should, and realize, oh crap, it is real.
Yeah.
You know, that person really did hurt themselves. And for that scene, and a lot of it is done so much for real. Hits are real. I mean, they're controlled, but real. Stunts are real, or more real than in American cinema very often, or at least more real in the sense that it's the person you see doing it actually doing it. So I'm not saying that people shouldn't be safe when they... I mean, it's just a movie. You know, you have to be safe. But at the same time, there's something exciting about the level of danger and ability that these people put forward to make a film.
Yeah, I would have to say that you see that so much in his movies. And Jackie Chan in interviews has said that, you know, he doesn't want cutaways where, you know, you only see the back of the person's head, or they shoot it in such a way so they can put in a stunt man. He wants the audience to still see that person in that action sequence. And since he, to him, usually in those cases, he feels that's, you know, it's his nod to verisimilitude. Granted, it probably has come at a fairly high physical cost. You know, I think about all the movies and all the times I've seen him be injured in movies, and I'm just like, he must be in constant pain. He can't not be, like, in constant, like, lingering pain from some of the injuries he's suffered over the years. I mean, and yet he does so much of it with a smile and with such, you know, gusto for it that, you know, I have to applaud his dedication to his craft.
What is your favorite set piece in this?
You know, it's the fight in the gang lair, I think, is probably one of my favorite set pieces in that, just because, you know, there's so many. First off, it's one of those great martial arts moments when, like, the hero takes on basically the army. So, you know, it's the one man army moment where, you know, where they really get to show exactly how powerful they are and how strong they are. But for him in particular, it's just that he is, you know, he's on their turf and uses it against them to the point where, you know, basically they have to give up at the end. The leader kind of like ends that brawl with a gun, and yet they just basically have to accept that, yes, we get it. You can kick our butts. you know, there isn't a part of this movie where he isn't kind of using his environment to his advantage, but I would say that was the one where he does it the most. There's just so many great moves in it. You know, with the pinball machines, you know, it almost turns into this sort of like Indiana Jones death trap, and he still gets his way out of it. You know, it's just every time they think they've got him cornered, he Jackie Chan's his way out of it. And it was just one of my favorite sequences in the whole movie and set pieces. How about you?
I'd have to agree that that is the best, certainly best fight in the whole thing. There are a lot of, you know, other fun moments throughout the film, but that I'm always happy to see it. One of the moments that I do find very goofy and amusing is how he defeats the hovercraft, because the hovercraft originally is controlled by the bad guys. They've got a gun to the pilot's head, and so they're running through the streets of Vancouver / the Bronx, and Jackie takes a car, you know, he sort of commandeers a vehicle, and then grabs a, what is it? It grabs like a sword or a, you know, with a serrated edge.
Yeah, it was like, looked like a huge, one of those like a huge, like Chinese, like double-handed serrated sword. Yeah.
Yeah. And so basically he wins a sword fight with a hovercraft, and just those words in combination is just the goofiest kind of thing, like a weird jousting moment. You know, in this, there are, yeah, traditional jumps and, you know, fighting and all sorts. But there's also, you know, like a strange car chase and car battle. Then they tape up the somehow they tape up the hovercraft.
Yeah, that was like, oh, duct tape. It'll fix anything, right? I watched MacGyver as a kid. It'll fix anything.
I don't know how they got the air back in the bag, but and then they use that to race down the white tiger and rip the clothes off him by running him over.
You know, I have to say that, like, those are always weird endings, because there's a similar ending in Police Story we'll talk about, but it's not just that the bad guy gets his comeuppance, but he gets this, like, almost gruesome comeuppance at the hands of the hero, and it's, I guess it's my Western sensibility, because I feel like you see this in a fair number of, like, specifically Jackie Chan endings, but it just, I always, like, at the end of that sequence where, you know, they drive him over the white tiger with the hovercraft, which like basically tears all the clothing off him and leaves him sort of bloody in the ground. And there's that sort of like, you know, Budweiser freeze frame moment of them all cheering. And it's one of those moments where I'm like, this strikes a weird note for me.
It's non-lethal in an American film or a more traditional action film. Not just American. The villain might be killed at the end. You'd find the hero was justified in either killing the bad guy, or the bad guy would die through his own devices, fall off the ledge, the Gruber style. In Jackie Chan pictures, which are comedies, You don't want to see anyone die. You know, so they won't kill anyone or won't kill anyone through the hero's own actions. So Jackie doesn't kill.
Yeah.
So is it worse to have the villain humiliated or beaten up, damaged, rather than a brief kill shot? I think that that may be part of the tonal problem.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you make there. My only counter to that is the fact that they had to repair the hovercraft and the cops were in on it. So it wasn't just sort of like he does this thing quickly before the cops can stop him from doing it. And that's where it ends. It's sort of like, oh no, by the way, we're going to totally let this foreign national civilian, like, well, here, we'll first fix the hovercraft that he destroyed for him. And then let this foreign national civilian wreak his bloody revenge on a criminal who, you know, who's like, that was the part I was like, yeah, I don't see how the cops can be in on this and not, like, one, lose any case that they take to court later or, you know, not get in trouble with themselves. But once again, don't look too closely at the movie.
Because that whole plot is aborted, really. We never find out what happens to the store.
Yeah.
Anita Mui's character basically loses the shop. It is destroyed by the end by the villains. It's destroyed like three times, but at the end, it's pretty dead. They rip the walls off of it. So, okay. So what happens to that? You know, she disappears from the story basically at that point. So what happens to that? What happens to the relationship between Jackie, who should be returning to China at some point, and Nancy? All of that is just like lost in the freeze frame. We've defeated the villain. Yay! It's over. We don't care what happens next. So the plot is really just a reason to string along action set pieces. And that's fine. That's fine. I think it's part of the camp fun of it. You know, this is a movie where for fun, they back a truck full of bouncing balls off a building just to see the balls rain down and bounce off the street.
Oh, I loved that part.
Yeah. The tune at the end is Kung Fu by Ash, which is about Jackie Chan. So we'll listen to a few bars of that and then, you know, maybe a promo or something, and then we'll come back with Police Story.
Working together? Really? Worst film you ever saw? Well, my next one will be better.
It's the Film and Water Podcast. The Film and Water Podcast covers movies new and old, classic and not so classic. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, available weekly on fireandwaterpodcast.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
Jackie Chan.
Hold it!
Dynamic. Dauntless. Resourceful. A ladies' man. No average cop, but he gets the job done. At first, he was hailed as a hero.
Lock him in the cells.
Yes, sir.
book him for murder.
Until he got set up.
Get in!
Now his whole police precinct is after him. To clear his name, his only chance is to get the crooks who framed him. Jackie Chan is a one-man battalion. As he sets his record straight in Police Story.
Had you seen this one before?
Yes, I had, actually. This was sort of after I'd watched Rumble in the Bronx and caught the Jackie Chan fever. I consumed as much like kind of Jackie Chan movies. Actually, I also have to give credit to Hong Kong Action Theater, the role-playing game, and their huge list of like movies to watch if you want to run a kung fu role-playing game. And so this, you know, the Jackie Chan filmography was heavy in that list. So I watched a bunch of those, and I've actually seen, yeah, pretty much all of the main trilogy. I've seen all three of them, and then I haven't seen any of the newer ones, these reboot ones.
New Police Story, Crime Story. The most recent one was Police Story Lockdown, which I watched. So anyway, Police Story is, okay, by director Jackie Chan, or directors Jackie Chan and Chi-Hwa Chen. It stars Jackie, of course, Maggie Cheung, and Bridget Lin. Other titles for this one, Jackie Chan's Police Force. And what you can expect from a lot of Jackie Chan pictures is to have these very, very generic titles. Project A, or, you know, those kinds of things. Yeah. And the reason is that he was such a trendsetter that people were imitating what he was going to do. They were coming out with cheap knockoffs before he could of things that might be, you know, like similar titles and what the movie might actually be. Because of that, they started just doing, well, let's just write Police Story or Project A or whatever. And then just release the films under that working title. It is available from Dragon Dynasty, which is one of the companies that has the best. Rumble in the Bronx, we talked about it earlier. We didn't mention where it was available. It is available on DVD and Blu-ray alone. Or my copy was a four film favorites martial arts collection thing, along with The Corruptor, Showdown Little Tokyo, and Bloodsport. Only really Bloodsport and Rumble are really worth it. And they're not in a letterbox format. They're not in widescreen, which, despite it being said on the box that it is.
What? You don't like Showdown in Little Tokyo? The Brandon Lee amazing vehicle?
We are off topic. And so, Police Story, the story is this. Chan Kakui is an elite police detective in Hong Kong who, after arresting but failing to get convicted, a drug lord, in part because he couldn't protect his star witness, a mischievous secretary played by Bridget Lin, finds himself framed for murder, the murder of a corrupt colleague. He goes rogue and, with only the help of his long-suffering girlfriend May, Maggie Cheung, and Lin's character, tracks the villains to their offices in a shopping mall, gets the evidence he needs to set things right, and in a final battle breaks the glass mall in pieces before going a bit wild on the drug lord. Justice is served, rather violently, the end. I went really quickly through that, but that's basically the bare bones of it. Yeah. Although there is that whole element of Kakui doing so well, you know, the police force spotlights him and puts him in ads, which makes it easier for the villains to find him again later, identify him. But it's also, similarly to Rumble, a story that is, you know, strings along a lot of set pieces, a lot of stunt work and fights. Gets a bit heavy on the slapstick comedy in the middle there.
The middle, I think, can be best summed up as cake in the face.
Well, there's cake in the face, and there's Maggie Cheung falling on her butt as her little scooter goes out of control.
Oh my god, I love that. I love that scene so much. It's so funny, and I feel so bad for her.
That's one of the things with these films. The first trilogy is all about Kakui, really, yeah. And May is in all of them, his girlfriend. May is a very, when I say long-suffering girlfriend, I mean, this is a character who gets humiliated and poorly treated by her boyfriend, Kakui, in many of these. And there are a lot of, you know, Three's Company kind of misunderstandings where she thinks he's with another girl, or he's trying to hide that he's with a woman for professional reasons. So she gets jealous. And I mean, that relationship does not seem very stable. And I can't believe it lasted three whole films. And Maggie Cheung at the time was doing a lot of these comedy pieces. She was like a comedy actress mostly. And then more or less after she got her teeth fixed, she became this sort of grand dame of Chinese cinema, starring in several films by Wong Kar-wai, including In the Mood for Love, which is, you know, one of the 100 films you should see before you die, or whatever it is.
I was about to say, she's kind of like, I almost feel like she's in some way kind of his muse. She's in so many of her Wong Kar-wai films.
Mm-hmm. People might have seen her, you know, if you're more into the mainstream, Jet Li's Hero. Mm-hmm. She's in that. And I mean, not at all a comedy character, not a little goofy, cutesy character at all, but the sort of almost austere.
It was very Chinese melodrama, like romantic tragedy melodrama in Hero in that role. Very beautifully done, too. So
in this, she's almost unrecognizable in this after seeing so much of her later work. And the other female star in this, I mean, I don't think the female stars are particularly well served by Police Story. Bridget Lin in this, and I mean, Bridget Lin, a kung fu star in her own right, the bride with white hair being like her, I'd say, her most famous role.
Yeah.
And I mean, her physicality in this is mostly about allowing her to take hits. She's not allowed to do any kung fu or anything, but she takes real falls and she takes, you know, real hits. And it's basically because you have an actress that can do the physical work, you know, you can be more violent towards her, even though she's not allowed to be violent towards others. So it's not a great film for women, but Kakui is one of those. I mean, I agree that towards the end, he goes rogue and he's more savage.
Yes.
And he's a bit more sly than the Rumble character, where he is, you know, the leader of his elite unit. And you've got other cops, you know, kind of peeing their pants in the opening sequence, literally. But he's the one who, you know, kind of controls the team and coordinates things. And, you know, it's more of a Fox character, more of a Bugs Bunny.
It's funny you should mention that. I was, as I was rewatching, I should say, Police Story on earlier this week, with my fiance was with me while I was watching it. And she's like, did that guy just pee his pants? And it was like, yeah, that's, there's Asian cinema for you.
But it's his first gunfight, obviously. This is not a gun culture. Like a lot of countries in the Commonwealth, in the British Commonwealth, all cops are not wearing guns. So these guys are detectives and they're on a stakeout and they've probably been given permission to use guns, you know, that kind of thing. And that sequence, I mean, as far as iconic sequences that people remember, that first sequence is probably one of the most memorable to general audiences because it was repeated in a Michael Bay film. Not well, I should say, but that's a sequence in a shantytown where at the end they're driving through down the hill, driving through the shantytown with people flying and, you know. And in Bad Boys 2, that whole sequence is repeated, except you don't see the shantytown is abandoned. There's nobody, you know, flying and there's nobody running away from it. And there's no stunt work to it. It's just big trucks driving through destruction porn at that point.
That whole opening sequence with and the culminating bus chase, a lot of that's also the bit at the end where he stops the bus, the bus stops short and the bad guys are thrown out of the front of the window. That got covered in Tango and Cash. That's in the opening sequence of Tango and Cash.
You're right.
Well, so this movie has a lot of callbacks in other movies as well. The sequence in the mall where he drives the motorcycle, knocks the guy on the motorcycle through all those glass sheets, which is hard to pick out because there's a lot of people being thrown through glass in that mall sequence. Brandon Lee had that sequence in Rapid Fire, which was specifically an homage to that moment as well. So this movie has a lot of respect and callbacks from other filmakers.
Or rip-offs.
Or rip-offs, I guess.
Because when you're talking about earlier Chinese cinema. You know, Jackie Chan in 1985, I mean, Police Story is correctly called one of his classic films, but it did not make it to this side of the Pacific in the same way that, you know, Rumble was released here and then Super Cop came. Police Story would have been something you might have seen at the video store, rather, and remains part of that niche. And so I think that some filmmakers or stunt designers might just be ripping off, you know, Hong Kong cinema that nobody's seen, basically, or nobody in the mainstream audience might have seen. And so you'd say, well, let's just do that thing. Let's just do that thing. And nobody's seen it before. And I gather that fans of Bad Boys 2, which I know exist, I don't expect homage from Michael Bay, is basically what I'm saying. And this is Jackie like 9 years before Rumble in the Bronx. And I think he's even more athletic and acrobatic and quick. I mean, he's faster in this. The moves are faster than in Rumble. So, you know, you can actually track the decline of a person who not only is getting older, but is putting himself in harm's way at all times, you know, working. The further back you go, the quicker, the faster, the more impressive that Jackie Chan's physicality is.
You can track some of like Jackie Chan's like signature injuries during stunts. And this one has one of his like fairly famous signature injuries. Project A, where he falls off the clock tower, is another big one where, oh my God, I can't believe he survived that fall. And, you know, and then of course, Rumble in the Bronx has a number of them. And it got to the point where actually when I'd watch movies, Jackie Chan movies, and watch the bloopers at the end and there wasn't some like horrendous injury, I was like, oh, is this movie really that good? He didn't get hurt enough. I don't feel like it was that great a movie. That's a horrible thing to say, but it's a weird part of the appeal of the movies is that, like, you know, as we said, you know, people often talk about, like, you know, bleeding for one's art, and that's metaphorically, and it's not metaphoric when it comes to Jackie Chan.
In this one, the big injury, if you will, is the very climax where he, you know, this is a film that the crew apparently called Glass Story as a joke. And it's something that I don't know where we picked it up, whether it's reading the trivia or just by ourselves. But when I watched it with my Kung Fu Friday group, we called it Glass Story as a joke. I don't know if we checked out the trivia and that's why we kept calling it that. And then every time we watched a Police Story, we would say, did you think there was enough glass broken? You know, Police Story 2 has actually a lot of glass being broken. So it really fits that mold. But yeah, they called it Glass Story because they break so much glass in it. That's why I called it a glass shopping mall. So many panes of glass and thick ones too. I mean, they wanted it to look more real than just like the thin sugar glass. And so you get a lot of that there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's like, it makes me think of the Bonnie and Clyde movie, which was the first movie with squibs. And so it was, you know, they were crazy with the usage of the squibs in that movie. And I almost feel like this was like the first movie. I know it isn't, but it was like the first movie where they discovered candy glass and we're like, we have this glass we can break and not cut our actors to ribbons. Let's do it. Because, yeah, there's a lot of getting thrown through glass, even in the beginning of the movie. Like, the sequence I mentioned with the guys going through the windshield of the double-decker bus, yeah.
And that's not where the injury occurs, of course. It's at the very end of that sequence, Jackie, to prevent the escape of the main villain, you know, slides down a pole in the middle of the mall that is connected to all sorts of, you know, lights, and it just is like a big explosion of sparks.
Yeah, like string lights, yeah.
Yeah, and there are two real injuries in that, because when he slid down, they did not plug the lighting apparatus into a low-voltage battery. Like, it was like a normal electrical output. And so he burned his hands pretty badly.
Second degree on hands and back.
That's pretty bad. And he also broke his collarbone. Or no, he dislocated his pelvic bone, which was not previously medically thought possible.
So, one of the things I thought was hilarious and also kind of sadly tragic in an interview with Jackie Chan was that he's like, oh, I'm uninsurable.
I bet.
Like, they just won't insure me. If I'm on a movie, then no one's going to insure me because I get so badly injured. And I was just like, oh, I wonder how that plays in U.S. movies. That must be why he feels that lack of control, because
they don't let him do everything that he might do.
No, like I said, I'm a fan of the Rush Hour movies, at least the first two of them. And he's definitely toned down in them a lot with his stunts. And you know that's because it's like the bankers were like, no, no, we're not paying for that. We're not paying for that. So
yeah, but the level of action in this is very high.
Yeah.
And the big set pieces, especially the front and the back, are quite excellent. I think the movie flags, I think I did. I don't know. I hadn't registered that the first time I saw it, probably, or it's kind of the stuff you forget is the middle bits, the yeah. you know, the bits between the big action pieces, because I did think the film flagged in the middle quite a lot. The synth comedy music and all the pratfalling and, you know, it gets and then the court case. That all takes quite a long time, and there's a lot of waiting around for the next big set piece, and I thought those parts of the plot weren't strong enough to really sustain, you know, the comedy bit with the phones, and he's just like, they put him to pasture, basically, and just answering phones, and there's a weird rape joke in there, and I mean, it's...
Yeah, there's just
not
like...
Not so good.
Yeah, it's... That phone sequence, I appreciate the physicality of him sort of like holding all the phones and stuff, but it was just one of those things where it starts with him being on the phone with May, and then all these other phone calls come in, and he's like, you know, trying to juggle all the phones, and there's a point in where I'm just like, yeah, you're at work. Tell your girlfriend to call back.
He was known for comedy, and I think this would have been well served by just making it a little bit more of a gritty police story.
Yeah, which is where I think it sings very well as a movie. Like, I think it hits all the right marks when it's that just straightforward, you know, just sort of super cop film. But, you know, those comedy set pieces are important. I think they play well throughout. I don't think it's a good Jackie Chan movie without at least some of the comedy, or at least in that era of Jackie Chan. I think he's kind of aged into being able to play much more serious roles at this point, yeah. Which I appreciate a great deal.
You know, he's got a comic disposition, and his characters will always be sort of lighthearted until they are pushed too far. I mean, tonally, in the same movie where we've got multiple cake in the face moments, you also get that ending, which you mentioned as being tonally difficult, where after he slid down that pole, he arrests the bad guy, but then goes off on him and starts punching him in the gut. You know, they're trying to stop him from killing him, really.
Yeah.
And the movie ends on that. I mean, again, it's like as soon as it's over, it's over. And we don't get any epilogues in Chinese films very often.
Yeah,
At least not the ones in the 70s and 80s. He's so angry and he's gone so over the edge. And I think that's really when he first flips out, you know, and kidnaps the superintendent or whatever, the inspector, who is kind of going along with it to help him escape so he can do the work without any controls. But at the same time, that whole scene is, oh, you know, Jackie is more than just a kind of smiling clown. He is an actor. You know, he is capable of bringing more difficult emotions, more intensity than his roles usually permit. So mm-hmm. I like that. But by the end, we don't get really any relief from that. It's like he goes off on the guy and you're just going, whoa, kukui.
Well, you know, in the second movie, he starts the movie demoted to like a traffic cop. Specifically in response to the damage he caused at the mall. And totally in the series itself has
consequence.
He does have consequence.
Because by the third, by Super Cop, he's once again on top, you know. So that's a fun little trilogy to watch. I think the Police Story 2 is probably the weakest overall. You know, you could do worse than watch that little trilogy of Police Story films. I do want to mention the music in this, because the theme song, which is called Hero Story, that is quite famous, really, because not only was it, you know, the theme for this film and for subsequent films in the Police Story sequence, but it also became, from 94 to 2004, it was the Hong Kong TV series Police Report theme as well, as sung by Jackie Chan, who sings it at the end of this. I'll play a clip. Jackie Chan is kind of the Will Smith of his world, you know, where he'll do the music for his own movie, you know, bank twice on the movie by selling the soundtrack. Even televised job advertisements for the Hong Kong police used that tune in their ads. So it's really become the music that represents the police force in Hong Kong.
Oh, nice.
Despite the example of police brutality that the climax offers. Because, you know, he punches the guy, and then the top guys, you know, his superiors, how do we write this up? Oh, I didn't see anything.
Yeah, that's a, you know, I gotta say that the chief of police, I'll call him, he gets kind of a bad rap, because, you know, when he's, you know, when he asks for him to be arrested, it's like, and Jackie's like all full of accusations. It's like, you know, none of those accusations seem to fit what we saw on the screen. You know, I didn't see that guy as a sniveler or anything like that. He was very by the book, and frankly, Jackie Chan was implicated in a murder. You know,
just doing his job.
It should be arrested. I mean, it's a classic 80s trope of the, you know, turn in your badge and your gun, you're done. It's okay, I own 20 more guns and I'm going to still solve this case, sort of trope. Which, you know, I loved as a kid growing up through the 80s. And when I go back and I watch movies with that, I'm like, you're a criminal. You're now fully a criminal. You have no moral high ground to stand on anymore. So my morality's become more nuanced, for sure. But I did like that when he kind of releases, after he takes the sort of the chief hostage and he releases him, and, you know, he tells the chief, like, you know, I was never going to hurt you. He's like, well, that's good to know. And he's like, you know, and he's kind of like, get this done, but, you know, we are coming after you. And I liked that sequence because it was a nice characterization.
I think that the way they were portraying him without saying so, and I think perhaps maybe Chinese audiences would have more picked it up. Mm-hmm. Because you've got, you know, the next in line is an older man. And actually, isn't he like the same uncle that he has?
He's the uncle. Yeah, he's the uncle in Rumble in the Bronx.
And they also calls him uncle, even though he's just a superior. He calls him uncle anyway, because that's how you treat elders in the Chinese society. And the fact that the inspector in charge is really a young man, younger than maybe even Jackie, or he looks younger anyways. Who is this pipsqueak, and how did he get to such a high position? So I think the inference is that we're supposed to get that he's perhaps more of a suck-up and a sniveler and a politician who got to that position without really going out into the field and earning it the way that others might have. And so when Jackie unloads on him, it's like we're missing a scene somewhere. We're missing a prequel where this guy somehow gets to that position and is resented for it by the actual cops, because there is an element of that. It's like, you send us into danger and you know nothing of it, really. And we're the ones on the front line, you know, that kind of thing. And you have a feeling that a younger man in that post, in that chair, probably didn't go through all the same experiences as the other cops, because he'd still be like a beat cop at this point, this young guy, you know. So there's that element of it that is just like glossed over, but makes it more real to me. I mean, it feels more like, okay, this is a lived-in universe somehow. And even Jackie is not a naive young character. He's more wise than the rest of his squad, and he's the one giving directions to younger cops. So it's like Kakui already has a pretty good career at this point.
Yeah.
And the universe has existed, you know, before this. It's not an origin story by any means.
But yeah, no, for sure. He's definitely a seasoned cop by the start of that movie, which is fine. I think our obsession with origins and prequels has made us forget how we sometimes just accepted characters as being ready to go. You know,
yeah.
While I've always loved the idea of what happened in the past, you know, when I saw Han Solo, I was like, oh, I get you. I don't really need to know more. Everything I need to know is right there when you first see him.
I mean, that's the origin story of Luke Skywalker,
right?
Star Wars. But Han Solo is already a made character, is already has a life. Police Story isn't quite on the level of, say, Buckaroo Banzai as far as, as jumping into the deep end, but it's still a lived-in world.
Although I have to say, if you do watch Buckaroo Banzai, definitely see if you can get a cut where they have the little origin sequence at the beginning narrated by Clancy Brown. And actually, Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. She plays his mom. In the sequence.
We just watched it like a week ago or so. For me, it was, again, for some, it was like for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And it was fun to see them jump into that deep end. And I mean, it's basically the idea that a lot of superhero movies have references that we nerds will get.
Yeah.
Because it is a sort of lived in universe. And then like a person would go, well, I guess that's just a reference I don't understand.
Yeah.
That's fine. Buckaroo Banzai does that without ever showing you the continuing adventures of Buckaroo Banzai that came before.
So, yeah, or the following ones.
Oh, or the following ones.
I still want to see him versus the crimes, World Crime Syndicate. Just remember, though, no matter where you go, there you are.
There you are. We'll listen to a few bars from Jackie Chan himself singing the hero theme from Police Story. And then we'll be back with our move of the week. Rumble in the Bronx. What is your favorite move from that movie, Dr. G?
This was hard to pick, but I love when he uses the ski as a weapon. There's so many sequences where he's just like in that. That's pretty much the end of that fight in the gang lair where he just whips out the ski and just the way the ski has like that flexibility to it, but also that little hooked end, and you see him like whack people with it. And, you know, just the way, you know, he uses it as in traditional sort of staff form. It's still one of my favorite sequences in that. To be fair, a very hard movie to pick out a favorite sequence out of.
Agreed.
That movie, unlike Police Story, which, like we mentioned, has that kind of like comedy slapstick movie in the middle of it that sort of slows it down. There's none of that in Rumble in the Bronx. There's very little in the way of slow parts that don't pay off. At least in character or emotion. But yeah, I love when he's using the ski in that sequence. I thought that was such a great, like, sort of impromptu weapon moment.
My favorite is also from that fight, but earlier on. And it is when he jumps through a shopping cart. So it's got a level of avoiding and then reusing that prop to fight back that I enjoy from Jackie Chan movies. But it's also the one moment that stuck out to me when I first saw it in 94, and whenever I close my eyes and think of Rumble in the Bronx, that's the scene I see. That was the athleticism and the acrobatics that stayed with me, and it was like the image from the film that I most remembered. That and, like, you know, the shock of seeing the Rockies in the background. Those are like the freeze frames, if you will, or the small nuggets that live in my imagination. I don't need to see the film to see them clearly in my head.
Yeah.
So that's my favorite moment.
For Police Story, I guess I'd have to say the iconic shantytown sequence that we've described before. How about yourself?
I do love that sequence where he stops the bus and the guys come flying out of the front of it. Once again, you know, it's so hard to pick on this one, but I just loved it so much because it's one, I'd seen Tango and Cash first, and so that seeing that where that came from and those sort of like those callbacks were really cool for me. But two, I also appreciate the fact that that's another one of the many like injury sequences because they were supposed to land on the car that was in front that he sort of like stops. Mm. And then the bus stops and they come out of the front. The car was there for them to land on because they had kind of prepped the car to be a soft spot or softer spot for them to land on. And so when they all hit the asphalt, they're hitting the asphalt. That was not part of the stunt. And, you know, but they left it in and it just, you know, I feel bad for the actors who got injured as part of that sequence. But like, you know, it adds to the realism as it were, of those sequences.
So what would we consider the move of the week? It doesn't even have to be either of any of these moves that we just discussed, because as long as the move of the week is really, you know, iconic Jackie Chan, since that's our theme, what would be the move of the week?
Actually, I'm going to go through with the shopping cart move, because I would have picked that had you not picked it originally as mine. Because I remember that one, too. The only other one I would probably put is the one where he breaks his foot. If we're talking iconic Jackie Chan moves, it's not an iconic Jackie Chan move unless he gets horribly injured in it in some ways. But of the ones we picked, I would definitely say I love that sequence because it's, you know, it's a think on your feet moment. Obviously, they choreographed it and thought it through. But, you know, if you're in the moment of him as a character fighting this gang on their turf, and he's caught in this moment, you know, they're all armed and he's hand to hand and they're coming at him, and he just, like, you know, who would have thought to go through a shopping cart? And that's just the sort of the genius of him thinking on his feet as a character in there is just, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think Jackie really sells the idea that he's in danger and that he's desperate.
Yeah.
He has to use everything he has because he doesn't have really enough skill to get out of it unless he, let's call it, cheats. Mm-hmm. And if we compare him to Bruce Lee again, since that was our last show, Bruce Lee is the guy that is super dangerous and knows it.
Yeah.
And half his game is intimidation.
He's power.
Well, he's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Okay?
And Jackie is Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
He's a diehard character who is really beat up by the end, you know, has to use his wits to get out of it because he's not a big unstoppable hero the way Arnold or Bruce Lee are. I think that if we're going to make American action film comparisons, Jackie Chan is a diehard character, you know, more human for it.
Yeah, Jackie Chan's John McClane and Bruce Lee would be definitely like the Terminator, you know.
Let's talk recommendations. Jackie Chan movies. What would you recommend? I mean, there are so many. What would be your recommendations for people who want to get into Jackie Chan movies more?
I really enjoyed, and I would recommend, Legend of the Drunken Master. I feel that's for a Jackie Chan in a traditional kung fu movie setting. And I think he plays Wong Fei Hung again, so the much reused Wong Fei Hung. I think I like it a lot more than the first Drunken Master, because it's technically Drunken Master 2, but you can find it in the States as Legend of the Drunken Master. I'm going to recommend Rush Hour, the first one in particular. I love it. I think his chemistry with Chris Tucker is great throughout that movie. You know, he's not as over the top with stunts as he is in one of his other, in, you know, ones where he has a lot more creative control. But I feel their comedic chemistry works best. And Rush Hour is the beginning of his sort of like getting teamed up with an American comedic star in a kung fu action movie, kung fu sort of comedy movie. And this is the one where I think he does the best. I have an asterisk on my third one. So I'm going to come back to my third one after you're done with yours, because I have a bit of an asterisk on my third one. So what were your three?
Well, my three were from this, more or less in this era. I could probably find things to recommend in, you know, Jackie in his 50s. But in this style, you know, in just like Police Story and Rumble in the Bronx, contemporary stories rather than something set in the past, I would recommend Super Cop, which you know, co-stars Michelle Yeoh as the actual Super Cop. But I do love Super Cop as a finish to this trilogy, and it's probably my favorite of the three. Rob B. Hood, I would recommend that. It's basically Three Men and a Baby, where the three men are Jack Chan. So he protects a baby, and the baby is part of the stunts, but I'm sure it's a fake baby. So that's a fun, nice merge of action and comedy in the Jack Chan style. Who Am I? I quite like, somewhat campy in the same way that Rumble is, but Who Am I has Jackie losing his memory, then finding himself raised by an African tribe. Well, they don't know who he is, so raised or helped or whatever it is. They think, because he asks, "Who am I?" they think that's his name, and then he thinks it's his name, and more or less, anyways. So the movie is pretty international. It goes to, you know, it's in Europe most of the time. Has a lot of great action in it. So Who Am I is a fun one that I don't think many people have seen.
Is that the one where he runs down the side of that glass building?
Yes.
Oh, that's such a great stunt.
So what's the asterisks?
Okay, so my asterisk was I was also picking Super Cop as well as my third, mainly because I love Michelle Yeoh so much. But my asterisk was the other one I would say is, like, get a movie where he's with Sammo Hung. I think, like, him and Sammo Hung together in movies are, you know, since they came up together from, you know, being kids, in his case, where he was basically sold to the Peking, you know, opera company by his parents, in essence. Which is really sad story when he talks about it. They're kind of ridiculous, but you know, like things like, you know, what was it? Wheels on Meals and a number of his other ones. I just love when the two of them are together because you can tell that they have a lot of like, you know, they have a lot of chemistry, personal history, and I think they have a really good like comedic timing together as well. I can't really think of a lot of specific movies where they stick out because I always like them together, but that's my asterisk. If
maybe like Dragons Forever,
yeah,
and also has Yuen Biao, you know. So
yeah, and yeah, I mean, I find Yuen Biao to be the sort of like the dull one of the three of them, the straight man. Really, he's their straight man of the group when it comes to kung fu comedy, getting also Sammo Hung in there too. And, you know, which I like to see Sammo Hung in movies too, because he's just, you know, he's such a big guy, but is also like a fairly accomplished martial artist in his own right as well.
Yeah. Sammo Hung's great. I mean, he's so atypical, you know, a figure that looks, you know, because he's a big man, he doesn't look like he should be flexible enough to do kung fu. So that's the big surprise, you know?
Yeah.
He's awesome. I think that's all the time we have on this double feature, but I will invite you to come back next time for more crazy kung fu action. Thanks for spending this time with me, Dr. G.
Oh, of course. I love it. It's one of my favorites collaborating podcasts I work on.
Don't make anyone jealous. But since we do enjoy reading your comments, a reminder that the best place for that is fireandwaterpodcast.com. But you can also visit the Fire and Water Podcast Network Facebook page or tag us on Twitter using the hashtag FWPodcast. Or you can find my other work at the Fire and Water Podcast Network or Dr. G's at Pulp to Pixels Podcasts. Until next time, be water, my friends.
Be water.